following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week. It is time for the best radio show you've heard a week. This is the True Wealth Show on the greatest Tuesday you've had a week. Joining me in studio today is my main man,
Matt Dixon.
And, of course, I'm your host, Dave Little John. And you know this because that announcer voice says so.
You're right.
Right? And, hey, we're going to jump right into the show today. Matt, have you noticed something odd going on in the banking system by chance?
Yeah. I mean, what we're starting to see is that magical 5% yield that a lot of people were getting in their FDIC-insured bank CDs has started to dwindle, right? Or their floating rate stuff where they were getting 4 or 5% and maybe down to 3, 3.5%.
Huh. Well, isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
So what are you suggesting? That banks are not paying as much on their deposits?
They are not.
I wonder what could be going on. Explain to me, Matt, what exactly could drive a bank to be paying less for deposits?
Well, banks are looking into the future, right? And they have to try and determine, you know, what is the direction of the market, right? And in this instance, we're talking about the bond market, fixed income market. And so if they're looking into the future and they think that in the future, rates are going to be lower than they are today, you would start to see rates decline.
So, and I'm going to give you another hint. It has to do with the economy.
Ooh, that's a big piece of it, and I don't think people are talking about this, so let's clue in.
Well, here's the thing, right? How do banks make money? It's not by paying you.
Right.
Right? Banks make money by lending the money to other people.
Right.
Okay? Now, if people are not borrowing money from banks, what does a bank have to do?
They have to go find someone to lend the money to.
Right, except that if somebody is not willing to borrow from the bank at a rate that's really high,
they have to bring the rate down.
They do. That's right. The banks have to lower the rates that they are lending.
Well, so when I start to see reports out that new manufacturing orders are in decline and that the economy
housing
appears,
starts are in decline. Yep. That unemployment is on the rise. What would that suggest if you were running a bank and you need to make loans to people?
Well, that means you're taking on more risk as the bank.
Right. And so, one, you have to be careful about who you make loans to.
Mm-hmm.
But if nobody's willing to borrow money from you because there's no need, then it suggests demand has fallen.
That is
demand
correct.
For loans falls. If demand for loans falls, what happens to the price of loans? It falls.
Right.
Right? The price of a loan is the interest rate.
That's true.
Okay? And so as those rates go down, then more people become willing to borrow money.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, banks are not the only ones involved in setting those rates.
No, because here's something that we also need to consider. The Fed has signaled that they think we might get 2 interest rate cuts by the end of this year.
Right. And when the Fed says that, what are they talking about?
They're saying that they're going to change the rate at which they're lending money.
The Fed is going to change the rate at which banks lend money to each other.
Right.
Right? So they set the rate for bank lending amongst institutions. Because you have to consider for a moment, if you ever wonder how some of these online banks can offer high savings account rates, but your local brick and mortar bank does not?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, those high interest rate banks in many cases are not making loans. Instead, what they're doing is they're loaning money to other banks.
Right.
And so they become a capital source for other banks that are making loans. Because if the bank doesn't have enough collateral, what are they going to do? They're going to get it from somewhere else. And
right.
So they are playing a balancing game of borrowing from other banks that are raising deposits and then lending it out. And they make what's called the spread or the margin between their cost to loan it out and their cost that they have to pay for their deposits. So banks and credit unions, and credit unions get a separate advantage because they have some tax exempt status, but most banks, they are managing the spread between their cost of capital, the loan, or the deposits rather, because they're paying you, versus their assets, which are loans to banks. The banks live in opposite land, right? A loan is an asset for a bank. For all of us, it's a liability.
Right.
But that's how banks make their money.
I always like to ask myself when I'm trying to get a gauge of what's happening in the economy or, you know, the bond market in this case, like I always ask myself, well, where is the money moving? Let's look at, like kind of play follow the leader a little bit. And if you look at it, there is a report out that I think like 70% of the institutional investors right now were boosting the duration exposure. So like how long the money is being lent out for. So they're loaning money for longer periods of time. And
duration means two things in bank land, by the way, just so you're aware, right? Because it's not only how long is the length of a loan, but it is how interest rate sensitive it is.
Right.
The greater the duration, the more interest rate sensitive. I mean, the more that the loan will reprice if rates change.
Right.
Okay. And this is really interesting because if do we think rates are going to go up or down?
Well, we think rates are going to go down. And so when we see all these institutions going longer out
on the duration,
that's indicative that they want to lock in higher rates for a longer period of time because they believe intrinsically that the rates should be coming down and then that won't be available to them in the future.
Right. And what it also means is they could make short-term profits because if they adjust to a higher duration loan, more interest rate sensitive, and rates go down, rates declining is favorable to them. Because they've locked in loans where they're getting paid back at a higher interest rate, and new loans are going to be getting paid less.
I guess I'm jumping way out of line here because I was going to save this for later on in the show. But you're
Well, it's not that what I'm trying to set up is the banking link here.
Because
I think a lot of folks see the bank as the Fed just tells the bank how much they can charge, and that's what happens. And that's actually not the way it works. The Fed tells banks what they can charge between each other, but the market determines the rate. And so what happens is if a bank can make a lot of loans, then they're going to need to get more deposits in the door to secure the loans. They may have to increase their interest rates that they're offering to attract investors.
Right.
Like they raise CD rates or savings account rates in order to attract money to their bank so that they have it available to reloan. That's a market supply and demand balance. But we don't often think of it that way if we're unfamiliar with the way banks make their money.
Right.
And banks are a huge component of the economy. Huge. Right. And so it's really we need to understand that the market itself defines the rates. So if your bank isn't paying you much interest, then what they're kind of saying in a sense is, well, we don't have people that want to borrow it from us. So we can't afford to pay you a whole bunch because it'll hurt our margins. We don't have anybody to borrow.
Interesting.
Right? So we don't have anybody to lend to, right? So that's what they're really saying is they're balancing their own risk.
It's an interesting frame up for this, right? Because like we're seeing all this stats coming out that, you know, money markets are seeing a lot of money flow out of that region, right? Like people aren't saying, you know what, I'm going to stick at the bank and I'm going to go from 4.5 down to 3, right? Like people aren't doing that. And they're moving their money out of the money market accounts and they're going to other places. And so maybe that's part of it. The banks just don't have the people to lend the money to.
Well, yeah, if there's no one to lend it to, then you don't need the deposits because deposits for banks are liabilities.
Right.
Right? Paying interest out is a liability. And so what does the bank do? It starts to lower the amount that it's going to try to charge, like that it wants to pay out.
Right.
So it doesn't need to attract you. Like whenever you say to yourself, like, oh, well, you know, I'm a valuable customer to the bank because I've got all this money on deposit. Said, actually, that's a liability for the bank. You are valuable if they need the deposits.
Right. There's a difference.
That's the difference, right? If they have loans to make, then you're a valuable customer. But it's really dependent upon how successful they are at lending. Okay. So it's just a different understanding of the ecosystem, because a lot of people get it in their head that, like, well, you know, the banks just decided, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is it's not just the banks. It's the free market itself and whether or not people are getting loans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And here's a really interesting thing, too. Most of the home loans aren't really banks. Most of them are
privatized and someone's buying it.
Well, it's not even that. It's most of them are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are government, like quasi-government entities that are buying up all of those mortgages. So banks tend to originate the mortgages, but they don't portfolio the mortgage, meaning the bank doesn't put it on their balance sheet. They underwrite it. They get all the information together, so they process it. But then Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae does a lot of them. And then you got the Veterans Administration and a few others that are involved in making specialty loans, Farm Bureau, that kind of thing. There are private lending groups out there,
mm-hmm.
right? And there are banks that make loans that they keep on their books. But a lot of banks, you don't think of it like this, but they are, their lending is a lot like a stock portfolio. It needs to be diversified so that they can spread their own risk out.
Yeah.
Because the banks don't want to have, like, we all made a bunch of loans on hotels, and now hotels are out of favor, and they're in trouble, right? If you don't remember back during COVID when a bunch of commercial real estate got in trouble, this was really hard on banks because commercial, like, think about downtown Portland.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing left.
Yeah, like there's a bunch of buildings that are empty.
And who bore that risk, you know?
Well, the banks are owning that risk now. And as those leases expire mm-hmm. and they can't get renewed, then yes, individuals or corporations own these buildings, but they're secured typically by banks.
Yep.
So the banks have that risk exposure that there's nobody that's going to buy or lease that property, and so the collateral value drops.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how you start to see things like real estate recessions.
Yeah.
Right? There's just no demand for it. And, you know, you have a crisis of collateral in the banking system.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I don't think we're at crisis levels. I don't think that's what's going on. But I will suggest that.
Maybe the tides are just kind of shifting.
We can see it happening, right?
The
yield curve is telling us this, and the Fed is telling us this. And here's a really interesting one. I think this is the next one. What we should probably do is like grab our first break.
Because investors really want to know, like, how could this affect me directly?
Yeah, and like,
a lot
much
of people have money in the bank, and they're sitting there, and like,
where
what
are the rates
do I do
going?
With it?
Like, how do we know that rates are probably going down? Like, how do we know? There's actually a way we can find out, right?
I'll tell you this.
Tell me.
The bond funds have been capturing a lot of money, a lot of inflow, but I'm not going to give away how much because it's recent news, and I know you hinted at a break.
All right.
So
well, Yeah, there it is. So we are going to have a break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about, like, all right, direction of rates. What are some of the things that tell us that rates are likely to go down? We'll cover that and how you as an investor can navigate it, maybe even profit from it.
There we go.
Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM. And 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn, joined in studio by
Matt Dixon.
And of course, if you're just getting caught up, I got to tell you, we are streaming live right now on YouTube. If you want to go find us, just check out the True Wealth Radio Show. Also, this will be available at podcasted, so it'll be on all your favorite places, so subscribe to that. Or you can go to our webpage at littlejohnfs.com and look under the Knowledge Center, and you can get past recordings of the show and you can get caught up. Today, we are talking about the fact that interest rates seem to be on the move and they seem to be headed a specific direction.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, can you help our listeners determine a little bit, like, what direction do things seem to be headed and how do we know this?
Well, here's a really good stat for our listeners, okay? In the first half of 2025, we saw large banks increase their holdings in the 10-year treasury by over 30%. That came from the Fed Reserve's Financial Stability Report. And so when you see that, I'm like, a 30% increase in the 10-year treasury means the banks are loading up. So the banks are saying, hey, we think that the yield is going to come down. And so they're kind of prepping for it in the background, and they're trying to be advantageous.
Yeah. Here's a little interesting tidbit for you. And if you want to go check this out for yourself, you can. You can go to the CMEgroup.com, and they have market data around the Fed funds futures. mm-hmm. meaning this is the handicapping of what people expect the future of the federal funds rate to be. So the next time that the Fed is supposed to meet is 42 days and some odd from now. And the market is predicting a 92.4% chance
wow.
that rates will drop from the current target rate of between 425 and 450 basis points to the new rate of 400 to 425. So a 25 basis point cut, right? So yep. that's a 92% probability that based on current purchases. If we were to look out a little bit further to the next meeting in October, there's a 59% chance that the rates fall to 375 to 400. And if we go to the end of the year into December, the last Fed meeting, there's about a 46% chance that rates could be all the way down to 350 to 375 basis points. Keep in mind, that's 3.5 to 375. From 4.5, so it's almost that was. There's about a 46% chance the markets are suggesting we could be 50 to 75 basis points lower than we are today.
Wow.
So 50 basis points, that's pretty high, right?
Mm-hmm.
A 92% chance that we hit a quarter point drop at the next meeting. Does that make it happen? No, there's still a 6.6% chance that that doesn't happen, or 7.6% chance.
Imagine the impact, though, on the markets as a whole if it's wrong, right? Like if that 90-something percent odd doesn't shake out, because we're trying to price it all in right now, today.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the mechanisms that indicates how we're doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Derivatives and so forth, and that's one of those
but
elements.
We talked about it earlier on the show that there is some headwinds with the economy, right? Like recessionary flags are starting to be waved. If we don't cut the rates, I think Jerome Powell in the back of his mind is sitting there like, well, if I don't do this, recession odds tip even higher. By cutting rates, maybe we kind of skated a little bit. So yeah, I think the odds being in the 90s is realistic.
The Fed is definitely trying to engineer a soft landing.
They are.
Right? They so far have done a relatively decent job of it.
It's been pretty clean.
I would suggest the thing that wasn't clean is the money printing of COVID and how that has run into significant inflation. And I'm sorry to say the people that it hurt the most are folks on the lower end of things,
mm-hmm.
right? If you are trying to buy a home right now and you're trying to figure out how to navigate the labor market, the money printing may have seemed like manna from heaven at first, but it has really come back to nip a lot of people. And I feel for the younger generation that's trying to become homeowners right now. It's just very, very unaffordable. But there is some interesting news going on, like how these rates percolate through the marketplace. This is sort of a perk up, investors out there. How many people have not sold their home because they couldn't afford to go anywhere else? They were structurally trapped.
Right.
If rates start to come back down, we have seen prices on homes come down. Or we've certainly seen the ambitious elevation of asking prices abate,
mm-hmm.
right? You're not seeing the home that was $250,000 5 years ago that somebody put on the market for $500,000 today, and now they're repricing it at $380,000.
What's crazy is stuff is sitting now on the market because
right.
we used to see stuff get listed and it was sold in a week. And now it's like stuff sitting for 3 months and getting nothing but price cuts. So a lot of people are actually taking their homes off the market.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's real. So that is effectively seeing those prices come back down.
Mm-hmm.
Major markets, we're seeing some softening in the housing market. I suspect that what we'll see is probably not 2008. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is, I throw a number out. It's doesn't make it anything, right? It's not a prediction that anybody should hang their hat on. It's just a number because we don't throw it out there. I don't see a 2008 style correction, not in the way that the banks are operating right now and so forth. But could we see housing come down anywhere from 5 to 15%? That's possible, right? It's not off the table. Just I don't see 50% knockdowns unless you're in a unique marketplace where something's particularly overbuilt and problematic. So yeah, if rates come down and housing prices come down, there may be an opportunity for folks that are sort of structurally locked out of the market to
right.
get a foot in the door.
Yeah.
Figuratively and literally.
Yeah.
So that'd be good. What else do we need to think about here?
You know, I think one of the things that people need to understand, and a lot don't, because, you know, when we're talking about fixed income, I think a lot of people naturally think, well, that's just a really boring part of the market, right? And because equities, who knows? You buy into a company and they do great and boom, it jumps 80% in a year. It's like, that's possible, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the fixed income world, you probably never got an 80% return in a year, maybe, but it's going to be something that's really abnormal. So a lot of people kind of tend to think that it's boring, but I think given the circumstances on where we're at right now, it gets more interesting because you can start to try and time things a little bit, which can be very difficult, right? But the math is interesting. I'm a numbers guy, right? And so I went online and I started doing a little bit of research because what happens if you buy a bond, right? And say it has like a 5% yield and then rates, you know, come down and now that same thing that you bought is paying 3%. Someone is going to be willing to pay you a premium for that, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, what type of premium might you be able to get? So I said, well, let's just assume it's a $100,000 investment and you get a 2% rate drop. Now, duration matters. You talked about this earlier on the show. So I picked a number like 7 years. Say you bought something with a 7-year duration. You start running the numbers on that, and I came up with a 14% price increase. So that $100,000, like if you wanted to sell it, you might be able to sell it for around $114,000. And I'm like, that's a 14% increase. That's not trivial, right?
Nope.
Because in the equities market, if you can go get, you know, 8% a year, you're probably most of the time pretty happy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, if you can go get a 14% price bump, that starts to get interesting, at least.
It does. And the game of bonds is different than the game of stocks.
It's so different, right? But we rarely talk about it.
Well, it is complicated.
It is.
Right? Because you've got premium or discount, but then you have another element at play, which is bonds are paying you income.
That's true, right? Too.
But you also have a bond that over time could decline or increase in value because you're buying it below par, which means there's appreciation or depreciation in
right.
addition to income relative to your purchase point. So you have... And if it's a callable bond, meaning you have a maturity date, but you may have a potential pre-maturity date
because
that
the bond they want to redeem it early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you've got multiple moving parts and you get into the long term or short term, and you get into the concepts of what we call accretion and amortization for tax treatment, and it just gets muddy.
Right.
Right.
And what are the basics that our listeners need to really understand so that they can have a better understanding of like how these interest rate shifts can affect them?
Okay. Good question. Let's pick in our minds a really simple visual to remember. Picture a teeter-totter.
Okay.
Right? From the time you were a kid, you've got the midpoint, and then you've got, you know, a plank on either end, right? And if you sit on one side, it goes down and the other side goes up and vice versa, right? And that's how a teeter-totter works. Well, on one side, you have the price of your bond, and on the other side, you have the interest rate. If rates go down, then the teeter-totter pivots and mm-hmm. the price of the bonds on the other side goes up. And if rates go up, the price goes down. So why is that? It's really simple, but it seems hard, right? The problem is that you're thinking the opposite of what we normally think. If you buy a bond, what you're really doing is loaning your money to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel like a loan. It feels like you bought a bond. So I think I bought a thing. And that thing should walk and talk like a stock or another thing that I bought. It's an asset, right? But no, you loaned your money to another party. And they're going to pay you interest, and then they're going to pay you back in a balloon payment at the end of the term.
Yeah.
And if you make a loan for one interest rate, and then tomorrow the rates go up, you made a bad loan because the new loan would have paid you better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to get rid of that loan, you have to sell it. And if you sell it, you're not going to get as much as you paid for it. So you're going to have to sell at a discount because the rates went up. But what is everybody doing today? They're saying, hey, how about I buy all the loan, or like I'll loan the money out right now, right? While rates are higher, because rates are going to go down. and I'm going to lock in my loan today. So tomorrow it looks better.
Yep. And I think a lot of people, and maybe I'm overgeneralizing here, I think a lot of people kind of forgot about bonds because you had quantitative easing going on for so long and rates were so low for so long that everyone just piled into stocks and that's where the return was, right? No one wanted 1% and 2% returns. And
bonds
so
have
for
been,
a long time.
Yeah, they've been kind of a really lame asset for like 10 years.
Until
the rates started going. And right. I used this term before, right? There just wasn't enough meat on the bone until there was.
Right. So you kind of have to ask yourself the question, have the Fed funds rates kind of peaked or have they not? That's really the question, right? Because if you look at it, if going on average, BlackRock came up with this stat, the 12 months following a rate peak, core bond funds tend to average like over 8% returns.
Yeah. Well, as rates come down, bond funds tend to do well. Now, there is a caveat to this.
Yep.
Okay? Here's the caveat. You have to stick around until after the break.
Oh, you're going to do this to
people? I'm totally going to do it.
What about the people that are watching live? Are
okay, then you guys stick around live because I'll tell you in the show prep for the next segment.
Okay.
But there is something you need to know about bond funds that's really important, and you got to stick around to learn what that is. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
We got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where Matt is trying to decide whether or not he's going to keep his job.
Yes. Just trying to sell David some long-term care policies.
They're starting to make fun of me as I am looking older on camera, and you know what? It is happening. So we just have to try to roll with that gracefully and take it in stride. But anyway, for those of you that are just joining us, Matt.
Yep.
Whippersnapper.
Yep.
Talk to me about interest rates
we had
declining and bond funds.
We had a cliffhanger right at the very end of the segment. Do you happen to remember what that was?
That actually was the cliffhanger I was bringing back.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was about bond funds. See? And I'm the one that's losing it here.
I know.
So we were talking to our listeners about the fact that first, the teeter-totter effect, how when rates go down, bond prices go up.
Yeah.
When rates go up, bond prices go down. Well, we're at a high point in rates that we expect them to go down. Bond prices likely go up. You discussed how this could be profitable. And you could see bond funds go up in value.
Oh, yeah.
But
one of the things
catch.
I didn't mention is you would have to sell your position early in order to capture that, right? Because I walked through some math on what about $100,000 and, you know, interest rates fall 2%. You would have to sell that early. And what do you give up when you sell it early? You give up that monthly income, right?
By the way, you're missing out on a key data point.
What's the other piece you want to talk about?
How long is the bond, right? How many more years before the bond matures? Because if the rates change and the bond matures in a week, who cares?
Yeah.
Right, the price isn't going to really change because, like, look, we're getting paid back in a week, no big deal, right?
Right,
but if it's like 10 years from now, it's like, geez, that's really going to affect me. I got 10 years of different payments now.
I think a lot of people miss that, the interest rate sensitivity.
That's
because if
the
they jockey the
duration.
Rates around and you bought something that's going to be paying you 7% for 10 years, and then that yield goes down to 5%, well, you're probably going to see its underlying value go up quite a bit more than something that matures, like you said, a year from now.
Right. And so that, again, the amount of sensitivity a bond has to rate is reflected in the calculation for duration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as simple as, well, duration is 3 months versus 6 months versus a year versus 5 years. Like, it's not that simple.
Right.
Right. That feeds into it, but that's not the whole equation.
Mm-hmm.
Credit quality has to do with it. Frequency of payments has to do with it. There are other elements at play, right?
Yeah.
Plus, typically, you can create a composite calculation for duration. So if I have lots of bonds in a portfolio, then I have the composite duration of all of them, not just each individual bond.
Another thing I think that's misunderstood when it comes to lending money out, right, is risk. And a lot of people, will say, I want all the return, but I don't want any risk. I want that 7% yield, but I don't want to take on any more risk than, a bank CD.
No, I would like 25%. In fact, you know what? I'd like 100% a month and no risk.
Yeah.
Can I 100% a day and no risk?
That'd be great.
I'd like infinity returns and no risk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yes, but unicorns are awesome.
Do you kind of want to, a lot of people don't know what's out there, right? They know bank CDs. That's the one thing that I think a lot of people understand. Do you want to go into, like, what are some of the other things that exist and how risk can potentially increase with the way that you're lending money out? Because bank CDs are just one piece. There's U.S. Treasuries. There's corporate bonds. There's high-yield bonds.
You have an idea here. I'm going to let you run with this for a second, and I'll add to it. Let me just preface it with this.
Mm-hmm.
The concept is that from an investor standpoint, again, look at this a little bit different. Consider if you're an investor, if I'm going to tie up my money,
right,
I need to be compensated properly for that.
This is something that I talk to investors all the time about, because they want to know, like, where do I go and how, like, what type of yields do I get?
Yes.
And so I often like to say, you know, risk tends to increase, like I just mentioned. U.S. treasuries have historically been considered to be one of the more safer investments out there, because guess what? The government has the printing press, right? They'll just print you more money if they run out. So U.S. treasuries don't have to pay you a ton.
Right.
Right. Now, if you're going to go lend your money to a corporation like Apple or Microsoft, who has a really high track record of paying people back, they have a ton of cash on hand.
Yeah.
They might not have to give you much more than a U.S. Treasury.
This,
for example,
the way, is the this is the used car analogy, mm-hmm, that I like to use.
Right.
Okay. I mean, if you have great credit and you go to get a car loan,
yep,
you can get anywhere from 0 to really low percent interest to buy a car loan.
Sure.
Okay. If you have terrible credit, you get credit that looks like a credit card, right? You're paying double-digit rates for a car loan.
Yep.
What's the difference? One of them is likely to pay the loan back, and the other is a risk. And so if you're a lousy risk, you have to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is a treasury a lousy risk? No.
No, because they can print more money.
Right? Yeah. So they're going to pay you back, even if it's with diluted dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't pay very much.
Right.
Okay. Is Apple a lousy risk? Not so far.
Right. Okay. Now, Ross Dress for Less? It
depends. Like, I don't know the credit rating, but here's one I do know. Carnival Cruise Lines.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Vacation dependent. A discretionary purchase.
Lots of debt. Last time I checked, yeah.
And so, they are oftentimes considered high yield bond,
right?
So when they borrow money, it costs them more because they're a higher risk. Shoot, they're at risk. What if there's a hurricane or something?
They can knock out all their ships. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they are at risk.
Right. And so you would expect to get paid more, like maybe 7% from them versus 4% from the Treasury Department. Yeah.
Yeah. It just depends on the yield curve right now.
Right.
And where it is. One of the ways that you can tell that the market is pretty strong is when high yield rates are not very different than low risk rates,
mm-hmm,
and default rates are very low. That
right.
indicates economic strength because companies are paying their loans and they're still growing and everything's working.
What's
right?
interesting is right now they're not that close. They're actually pretty far apart.
The spread in yields between high yield and low yield has expanded. Okay. What we look for as a real sign of distress is beyond the expansion is do you start to see an increase in default rates.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's a sign that there's more than just cracks in the foundation. You're starting to see water come
through.
This
is why I like to talk about diversity, though, when you're lending money and fixed duration stuff. You talked about this off camera during the break. Right, where you were
that
saying,
and Blake yawning. Stop it.
Right. But no, you were talking about, now I just completely lost my train of thought. open-ended bond funds. How they, you know, if you're a bond manager and all this money keeps coming in, you might not have a set end date, where some bond funds, they mature December of 2026.
I'm going to ask you to clarify here because this feels a little non sequitur to me. Help our listeners out. What's the significance of having end dates and not having end dates?
Well, the money is coming back to you when there's an end date, right? Like it literally ends when there is an end date. And then it's like, well, it's matured. Here's your investment back.
Well, I think there's more to it that's really relevant in this calculation.
Okay.
When there is an end date, you can actually calculate how much the bond will appreciate or depreciate.
Correct.
Because it has a terminal point, and so you're calculating to the point that you get paid back.
Mm-hmm.
Where a bond fund has a manager that's buying new bonds all the time, and they're sort of rolling those into your average
into
portfolio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is no end date for a bond fund. It's rolling, right? Mm-hmm. So, oh, well, when rates are high, we bought a bunch of bonds. And when rates are low, we buy a different price. And they're always kind of, some new ones are rolling off and some new ones are coming in. So you're essentially buying into a laddered bond. If you've ever heard of this concept before, it's like I buy a CD that's 3 months and a CD that's 4 months and 5 months and 6 months, all the way up to 12 months. And then when my 12-month CD matures, I buy another 12-month CD. And then a month later, I buy the next 12-monther. And I'm always having a CD mature. And I've got the ones that I bought already that are still invested. And what I'm doing is I'm getting the new rate, but I'm averaging it out with the old rate. This is favorable if you're locking in high rates, but it's less favorable when you're locking in low rates.
Right.
And bond funds typically are open-ended and they're still buying more.
Mm-hmm.
So you do not have the benefit of being able to buy something and, oh, shoot, it dropped in price. Well, I'll just hang on to it, get my interest payments, and eventually I'll get my principal back and I'll cash out. You don't get that benefit in bond funds typically. You could take mm-hmm. losses in bond funds a lot easier.
Yeah. So what would you say to the person that is, you know, in this situation where maybe they got into some floating rate deal and the rates have come down, what's one of the big takeaways after hearing all of this that you think that people should know, kind of latch onto? Like, what are your kind of top three big takeaways from all of this?
Oh, I like the question. Let's first do this. Help our listeners understand what floating rates are.
Yep. So a floating rate environment is literally like the rate is changing, right? Like you can buy something where it's like you're going to get 5% over the course of a year and that 5% stays 5%. But some people, they get into a situation where they're lending money out and the rates are allowed to change, right? And so you were getting 5%, then maybe it went to 4.5%, 4.1%.
Yeah, sometimes we call these adjustable rates too,
mm-hmm.
right? Floating rate is a common term in the credit market if you're buying them as an investor, institutional investing or whatnot. So you're buying a floating rate, something that is going to reprice if interest rates change,
yep.
versus a fixed rate that is not going to reprice. So I think that's really valuable that we lock that in. But now the things that we should or shouldn't do, those are great questions that we will answer when we come back after our last break.
So the big takeaways are coming.
The big takeaways are coming. So you'll want to know this if you're a bond investor, or it's kind of relevant in CDs too. So this is important. So we're going to get that in a few more thoughts, but we got to take our last break. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
When our names for years to come.
Jeez, you got it. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where we will be trying to, you know.
We're going
to
become heroes in about 2 minutes.
We are not going to offer advice of any kind. It is not that kind of show.
What if they want advice that we can't give over the radio because
we can't give advice?
Yeah,
because for you, it might be different, right?
Sure.
So we don't offer advice, but we're going to offer insight. How about that? If they need advice, give us a call at
541-375-0898. You can always text us, too, if a phone call is too intimidating or whatever.
Yes, yeah. Or email info@littlejohnfs.com. You can get one of our team members. Go find the person that you like that is helping do this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, it's interesting. I don't hear the conversations. You know, maybe other advisors are talking about this stuff. I don't know.
Mm.
All right. So, Matt, you did set this up, and I think it's a fascinating question to ask, and that is, what should investors look at right now if we knew rates were going to drop?
Correct.
Okay. We knew they were going to drop, and you were in some type of account where the rates will adjust down.
Right.
Maybe you're in a high yield savings account. Maybe you're in a floating rate account, something that's not fixed.
Correct.
Okay. So in that scenario, what are some of the things that you could consider? Remember, we're not telling you to do this. We're saying consider this stuff and then vet this advice with some, you know, with your numbers people, mm-hmm. your tax people, all your advisors that you want to work with so that it's appropriate for you.
Right.
But let's just talk about it. So rates are dropping. What's the plan?
Okay. Well, one thing that you could consider would be to go buy some high-yield bond fund, right, where there is a fixed duration to it, and you'd probably be looking on, you know, later out, because you talked about this. The further out you go, the more interest rate sensitive it is. And as you take on more risk, also, you're expecting that to move more with interest rate changes. So if they do cut rates, right, then, you know, you might have a fund that you can turn around and sell at a premium, like we talked about. And you would also expect potentially equities to have dipped, right? We've talked about, you know, kind of the headwinds with maybe some recessionary flags and how bonds and stocks kind of, you know, walk and talk together.
Yeah, well, oftentimes money moves out of the stock market into the bond market.
And then from the bond market back into the stock market. Yeah, so you could literally try and play both ends of this thing where it's like, I'm just going to get a little bit of appreciation on my bond and then go buy equities when they look cheaper, because right now are peak valuations.
Yeah. In practice, it's really hard to do.
It is.
Right. In theory, yeah, that'd be great. If you had a crystal ball and you could figure that stuff out, that's what you'd do. There are some things that one can do, which is, for example, oh, I have fixed income. It's a percentage of my allotment anyway. Mm-hmm. I might consider locking in some of the higher rates today and then gradually transitioning into stock exposure and averaging my cost out. And what that does is it breaks up the move into many smaller moves, and mm-hmm. so you're by averaging your price, you don't get the extreme. So if you're right, you don't get as much of an extreme on the upside, but also if you're wrong, you don't get hurt as much on the downside.
Yeah, I mean, if you're wrong, right, your cash in theory is
wrong, right?
Yeah, but I mean, if you're wrong and then rates stay higher than you expected for longer, cash still is kind of attractive, right? And
sure.
as long as you can just latch onto that income stream and hold onto that because you bought a rate that you like, well, now it's kind of just a waiting game.
Yeah.
It's not like a full-blown disaster, right?
It's true. It's true. So I think one of the things that we have to remind investors, cash is an asset.
It is.
Right? And it's also an opportunity account, because if you've got cash, what you have is dry powder if something goes on sale, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I have to ask the question, like, let's say you are somebody that's, you know, looking to buy real estate, but you're sitting on cash. If you forego 1 or 2% rate of return on your cash, but then you see a real estate investment that drops 15-20% in value and you're able to buy it, then having the cash on hand did not hurt you.
Right.
Right. And so sometimes we just have to look at how we're managing our opportunities. And the other thing is, I love this analogy, right? Opportunities are kind of like a river. Like they're just floating by. There's just opportunities and they come by you. And if you miss that one, just wait. Another one's going to come down the street.
This is getting a little hippy dippy for me here, David.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
You know, there's these opportunities, the river, it's flowing by.
I
like it though. I like it. Lean into it.
Opportunities keep showing up.
They
right?
do.
If you get impatient, like if you miss an opportunity, be patient. Another one's coming.
Yeah.
That's the way the markets operate here.
It's true.
It's every time that you try to force something, that's when things usually come back to bite you.
Yeah. That's
right?
Where like the greed tends to speak to people, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, my buddy just made 40% in the market this year and I want to make 40. Just throw it all in right now. And it's like, well, you just bought at the top of the market.
Chasing
Good
returns
job.
Is just not a great strategy.
But that's not necessarily what we're talking about. We're just saying, look at where the market's at. Look at what it's giving you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you considering all of the angles?
Right. And if I also think it's very relevant if you find yourself, you know, with CDs that are maturing and they're at really low rates. You know, there are places to go to look for better rates. Okay, remember, not all banks are the same, right? They're all trying to attract money at different rates. Easy place to go is bankrate.com,
mm-hmm.
and you can look up the current CD and savings rates. With today's, you know, online access, you can get a lot of virtual accounts with virtual banks, right? They're not
right.
brick and mortar. So you can chase the rates if you're willing to do that. I know there are some programs that'll do it for you, and we have some of those kinds of programs that rotate through cash. They all come with the different hiccups. You know, there's not a lot of perfect solutions if you're trying to, you know, rate hop, but a little, it doesn't take a lot of effort. It just takes a little bit of, you know, paying attention, and you can migrate from place to place and keep yourself getting a higher rate of return on fixed income.
What if someone doesn't want to do it themselves and try and track all of this because it's just too much to watch?
Well, you know, one of the things I'd consider is what level of safety are you really expecting, and what length of time are you expecting to be invested? A lot of folks may perceive that CDs are the only place that they can invest because they insist on FDIC insurance. That may not necessarily be the only thing that's appropriate for them. You can look at investment grade bonds that have very high credit quality that may still be worth considering and could pay you more, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there are a lot of options for fixed income management that are still out there for folks. And there may be an opportunity to use fixed income, but say take the interest and use that to buy into conservative equities that pay dividends. And you're still getting income, but you're going to start adding a growth aspect to the money too.
One of my personal favorite strategies for people that are kind of leery of the market, where it's like, hey, you know, you're making $1,500 a month in interest. Have you thought about just using that?
Yeah,
to go
just invest the interest and leave the principal protected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are lots of tried and true strategies here. Sometimes we try to get so fancy that we forget about the stuff that has historically been a great solution.
Yeah.
Right?
Sometimes it's okay to stick with the basics.
Exactly. So anyway, I think I'll leave you with these simple thoughts. Rates are likely dropping. We can't guarantee it, but it sure looks like that's what's on the horizon. And if that's the case, if you have not evaluated the position of your portfolio, if you don't know what it means to look at interest rate sensitivity or duration, it might be time.
Mm-hmm.
And consider whether or not what you're holding is well positioned. And that's something where if you don't know how to do it, reach out to a pro.
Well, and we're not going to charge to look at that.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to give us a shout, we can run reports and let you know what it looks like and give you a risk assessment. But you got to call to do it, right?
You got to do something.
Exactly.
Okay, so grab that phone.
Yes.
Punch in the numbers.
Call or text 541-375-0898.
And the name of the firm is?
Little John Financial.
There it is. Wow.
All right, gang. Well, as I look at the clock, it's time. We got to run. So until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240 AM and 93.9 FM.